unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. Purport. Becoming Krishna conscious brings about anartha apagamaha, the disappearance of all anarthas. The material condition we have unnecessarily accepted. The material body is the basic principle of these unwanted miserable conditions. The entire Vedic civilization is meant to relieve one from these unwanted miseries. But persons bound by the laws of nature do not know the destination of life. As described in the previous verse, Isha Tantram Uru Dhamni Bhattha, they are conditioned by the three strong modes of material nature. The education that keeps the conditioned soul bound life after life is called materialistic education. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that materialistic education expands the influence of Maya. Such an education induces the conditioned soul to be increasingly attracted to materialistic life and to stray further and further away from liberation, from unwanted miseries. One may ask why highly educated persons do not take to Krishna consciousness. The reason is explained in this verse. Unless one takes shelter of a bona fide, fully Krishna conscious spiritual master, there is no chance of understanding Krishna. The educators, scholars and big political leaders, worshipped by millions of people, cannot understand the goal of life and take to Krishna consciousness, for they have not accepted a bona fide spiritual master and the Vedas. Therefore, in the Mundaka Upanishad, it is said, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labho, Na Medhaya, Na Bokuna Shrutena. One cannot become fully realized, self-realized, simply by having an academic education. By presenting lectures in an erudite way, Pravachanena Labho, or by being an intelligent scientist who discovers many wonderful things. One cannot understand Krishna unless one is graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only one who has surrendered to a pure devotee of Krishna and taken the dust of his lotus feet can understand Krishna. First, one must understand how to get out of the clutches of Maya. The only means is to become Krishna conscious. And to become Krishna conscious very easily, one must take shelter of a realized soul, a Mahat or Mahatma, whose only interest is to engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9.13, Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakriti ashrita bhajanti ananna manaso gyatva bhutarim abhvayam. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Therefore, to end the unwanted miseries of life, one must become a devotee. Jashasti bhakti bhagavat tatinchana sargoi gunoi stotro samashati sudha. One who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna consistently manifests all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods. Bhagavatam 5.18.12. Jasya deve parabhaktir yatha deve tatha guru tashyate kothitahi artha prakashante mahatmana. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. This is from Shetashar Taru Upanishad 6.23. jam evaisha vinute tena labhas tashaisha atma vibrinute tanum sham. The Lord is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person he manifests his own form. Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.3. These are Vedic injunctions. One must take shelter of a self-realized spiritual master, not a materially educated scholar or politician. One must take shelter of an Ishkinchana, a person engaged in devotional service and free from material contamination. That is the way to return home, back to Godhead. Repeating the translation, unless the smear upon their bodies, the dust of the lotus feet of Vaishnava, completely free from material contamination, persons very much inclined towards materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord in this way can one be freed from material contamination. So, forgetfulness of Krishna, we come to the material nature and then we become totally bound. It's a state of illusion when we completely lose our memory. By forgetting Krishna, we forget everything about the spiritual nature and we forget about our identity being spiritual. And coming in contact with the material nature, we simply become bound by the material nature, or we become materialized. Originally we all are spirit, but when we come in contact with the material nature, then we begin to identify ourselves with the material body and everything related to the material body. So this is how a living entity completely loses himself. And to establish that point, Prabhupada often gave the example of a spark coming out of fire and falling in a heap of ash. Like, a spark is fire. Qualitatively, a spark is fire, although it's very minute, very small. But, and as long as the spark is in contact with the spark is also fire. But the moment the spark comes out of the fire and falls in the heap of ash, then it loses its fiery qualities and turns into a speck of ash. And the same way, when a living entity comes out of the spiritual sky, when a living entity detaches himself from Krishna, then he comes in contact with Krishna's external energy, Maya, and he loses his spiritual identity, loses his spiritual qualities, and becomes and develops the qualities of Maya, the qualities of matter. And thus, forgetting his spiritual identity, he simply considers that his identity is his body. His body is his real self. And that's why time and time again, Prabhupada explained that we are not this body, but we are spirit souls. That's the very beginning of spiritual understanding. Now, when a living entity comes in contact with the material nature, he becomes totally bewildered and he just becomes caught up and gets carried away by the illusory potency of the Lord, Maya. It is impossible for him to get out of the material nature. Once a living entity becomes caught up in the whirlpool of Maya. Like when a living entity becomes conditioned by Maya, it is actually practically impossible for him. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Doibi yesha gunamuni mamo maya durattaya. Durattaya means insurmountable. Krishna is saying this Maya is doibi. Mamo Maya. This Maya is my potency, and this potency Maya is divine, and this Maya is endowed with three modes of material nature. And it is impossible for a living entity to get out of the clutches of So for a living entity it is impossible. But the next shloka Krishna is saying, Mame Bhaja Prapuddhante Maya Metam Tarantide. But when one surrenders unto me, Mame Bhaja Prapuddhante, only unto me, Eva specifically pointing out, Eva means only. So Krishna is specifically pointing out that when one surrenders unto me alone, then only he becomes eligible to get out of this maya. Maya metam tarantite. Not only tarantite, not only he goes across the maya, swims across maya, but he very easily overcomes maya. It becomes an easy job. Prabhupada said that, Prabhupada often, purport, Prabhupada mentioned that actually a devotee doesn't have to get across the material nature. I mean, doesn't have to swim across or get into a boat, although it has been explained that the Lord has left a boat on the shore of this material nature. And one can easily get across this material nature by stepping into the boat. But the wonderful arrangement of the by that wonderful arrangement of the Lord, the boat always remains in this material nature. That's actually a verse from this chapter only, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, that the boat never leaves the shore of this material nature. It's eternally present. And explaining that factor, Prabhupada is saying that actually the boat doesn't have to go to the other side of the material nature, across the ocean of the material nature. Actually, the material nature shrinks so much so that it becomes like a pool of water or some water held in the hoof prints of a cat. And to cross that, one does not need a boat. One can very easily just step across. So a devotee, when he takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna and his devotees, he doesn't even have to row the boat to the other side of the material nature. Just by taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, one immediately transcends this material platform. Now, Krishna's mercy actually is very rare. That has been pointed out in this verse. To receive direct mercy from Krishna is very, very difficult. And explaining that point, Prabhupada is saying that the way it is very difficult to please a very rich man. You cannot possibly please a very rich man. He has everything that he needs. What can you give him? Say there is a king. What can you give him? He has everything. So what is there that you can offer him to please him? But it may be very difficult to please the king. But if you, it is very easy, or rather it's not so difficult to please the son of that king. The little son of the king is very easy to please. You can just offer him some sweets and he'll become very happy. And when the father sees that his son is pleased, then the father automatically becomes pleased. So it is difficult to please Krishna, but it is not difficult to please Krishna's devotees. Devotees are very, very easy to please, to please. So, by pleasing the devotee of Krishna, or one can very easily please a devotee of Krishna, and thus one can receive Krishna's mercy by making Krishna satisfying, by making a devotee, making his devotee happy. When Krishna sees that we are trying to serve his pure devotees, then Krishna immediately becomes very, very merciful. So that's how we have a very easy way of getting out of this material nature. For us it is not at all difficult because we have the secret. Now otherwise it is very difficult to stop the cycle of birth and death in this material nature. In the material nature we are flowing in one direction. Like it's a strong, very, very strong river. And a small blade of grass is swept away in the ocean, in that current. Now, to make the blade of grass move in the opposite direction is absolutely impossible. Only when some stronger force acts on that blade of grass, then only it can start moving towards the other direction, opposite direction. Like in the material nature, everyone is flowing in the direction of matter. Our senses are constantly running towards the material nature. And it is impossible to withdraw our senses and make our consciousness run towards the other direction. It's impossible. But only when some divine energy acts, then only we can get out of this material bondage and start to push our consciousness or make our consciousness move to the other direction, towards Krishna. The Krishna and Maya, they're two opposite poles. Either we are running towards Maya, or we can run towards Krishna. Because we are tatastha, we are marginal, we have the ability to go either towards the material side or towards the spiritual side. And going towards the spiritual side is possible only when some divine potency, divine grace acts upon us. And the divine grace is manifest through the devotees of Krishna. Otherwise it's practically impossible to get out of this material nature. And the potency of a devotee of Krishna, no matter how humble he is so great that he can alone, single-handedly, he can deliver the whole world. Because he becomes the via medium, he becomes the agent for Krishna's potency. Krishna's potency acts through him. When one becomes Krishna conscious and wants to deliver the conditioned living entities, then Krishna empowers him. And we have seen that in Srila Prabhupada. Single-handedly Prabhupada stopped the wheel of Maya actually. Prabhupada, at the age of 70, he went to America. An old man, not only an old man, on the way he had two heart attacks. He didn't have any money. He didn't know where he was going to stay. He didn't have any so-called security whatsoever. And he didn't have any resources. But Prabhupada went, and because he desired, because a pure devotee desired, Krishna made his wish. Krishna fulfilled his desire, fulfilled his wish. Prabhupada wanted, let everybody become free from this material bondage. Let Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy spread all over the world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most munificent appearance of the Lord, who came to flood this whole world with Krishna consciousness so that the most degraded people can even go back to God. Prabhupada simply desired that, and that was very obvious in Prabhupada's poem that he wrote in the boat, on the boat. Like there are two poems he wrote, Malkine Bhagavad Dharma and Spreading Krishna Consciousness in the United States. And in that one, Prabhupada pointed out that I do not know why you have brought me here, but I can guess that you have some plan, you have some divine plan. Ache kichu karjo tabo ei onumane nahe keno aniben ei ugrasthane. Otherwise, why you would bring me in such a terrible place? In Prabhupada's eyes, America was a terrible place, a replace of Maya, where Kali is spreading his influence in a very, very effective way. It's the stomping ground of Kali, the playground of Kali. this Western world. And for a pure devotee like Prabhupada, it's very, very difficult to remain here. So Prabhupada came being inspired by Krishna. And Prabhupada desired that let all these people, those who are influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance, become free from material bondage. Rajastamo gunera shakoli achanna. Vasudev katha ruchi hobe ki prasanna. These people, Prabhupada was expressing his doubt that these people are completely influenced. They are completely overwhelmed by the mode of passion and ignorance. Achanna means completely submerged. These people are completely submerged in the mode of passion and ignorance. Will they ever develop any desire, taste for Vasudev Katha, the glories of Sri Krishna? And then Prabhupada is praying that, my Lord, you are absolute, you are all powerful. So if you want, then it can be possible. So now you must have brought me here to make me dance. And if you so desire, then let me dance, let me dance. Nachao, nachao, Prabhu, nachao, Shrimate, kashte uttali jata, nachao, Shrimate. Now make me dance like a puppet in your hand. And this is the sign of a pure devotee. A pure devotee is not an extremely charismatic person or so and so forth. The charisma is not the criterion for devotion. The criterion for devotion is actually humility. To the extent, to the degree, we become surrendered to Krishna, to that degree we become purified. The process of devotional service is sharanagati, surrender. And to the degree we surrender to Krishna, to that degree we become purified. And then all the divine qualities become manifest in that personality. Like actually when we talk about a pure devotee, Prabhupada is a perfect example. We do not have to go very far. I mean, he is there, a living personality right in front of our eyes, and we can see what are the qualifications of a pure devotee. Prabhupada was the most humble person. I mean, to talk about Prabhupada's humility, I just remembered one incident. Recently I heard it in Amsterdam. Prabhupada was in Amsterdam early days, and probably you remember those days Amsterdam was the heaven for the hippies, and a lot of people used to come to the temple, stay for a few days and go away. It was a very, very untogether center. So Prabhupada came, and Prabhupada actually was holding a fire sacrifice to initiate a few devotees. And nothing was organized, everything was absolutely disorganized. And the fire pit was not properly made, there was no flowers, there was no fruit. Then somebody remembered that there is some fruit. So Prabhupada should bring the fruits. And the person who was asked to bring the fruits was a new bhakti. And she made a fruit salad. And brought the fruits. And Prabhupada became furious. Prabhupada was very, very annoyed. And Prabhupada started to chastise that girl. But this girl was such a neophyte devotee, such a neophyte bhakti, that she started giggling. She started laughing. And Prabhupada became even more angry. And at that time there was one man who stayed in the temple for a few days, and then he looked. But you know, he had some kind of sentiment for Krishna consciousness, and he used to keep coming. So he came for the location, and just an out and out hippie, right? Long hair, and so when he was in the temple, he saw devotees say that when somebody gets agitated or says, just chant Hare Krishna. So he walks up to Prabhupada and tells him, why don't you chant Hare Krishna? So Prabhupada just looked at him and he picked up his big bag and started chanting. So that shows how humble Prabhupada was. Right? I mean, if that happened to us, how we would have reacted. Our immediate response would have been, who the hell you are to tell me what to do. But Prabhupada saw Krishna everywhere. That's the sign of Uttamadhikari. The sign of Uttamadhikari is Sarvabhuteshu Japashet Bhagavad Bhavamatmana. One who sees Bhagavad Bhavam, the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in every living entity, he is a pure devotee, Uttamadhikari Bhakta. And this way we can see that Prabhupada didn't see that he is a bum or a hippie or a bloke devotee and so on and so forth. Prabhupada simply saw Krishna, and when he says, why don't you chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada took it as an instruction from Krishna. And he immediately acted upon that. So humble. I mean, at least I have never seen such a humble person. And sometimes Prabhupada used to get angry. And Prabhupada's anger was so furious. Prabhupada's anger could burn the whole world. Anybody who has experienced that knows what it means. Prabhupada, in one way, Prabhupada was so angry. He used to get so angry. But then again, you can see that Prabhupada was so humble. And Prabhupada's anger was Krishna conscious. Prabhupada's anger was when somebody would not act according to his instruction, when somebody would not display enough sincerity to become Krishna conscious, then only Prabhupada would become angry. But Prabhupada never got angry because of his personal comforts or anything. Prabhupada was totally unconcerned about his personal comforts or personal well-being. He was simply concerned about Krishna's satisfaction. And if there was some impediment in the endeavor to satisfy Krishna, then Prabhupada used to get angry. So it's such a contrast. Like in one way, Prabhupada was such a furious, such a fiery person. But at the same time, Prabhupada was so humble. So, and then at the same time we can see that Prabhupada was the most charismatic person. If you talk about charisma, Prabhupada was the most charismatic person. And everyone appeared to be like a slob in front of Prabhupada. The biggest movie stars would look like a slob in front of Prabhupada. Like sometimes I heard, actually somebody once told me what impressed him so much was Prabhupada's, the way Prabhupada carries himself. He was in show business himself before. And when he saw Prabhupada, just came to see Prabhupada in LA, out of curiosity. And he came with his friends. He was not interested to come. His friends said, let's go and see the Swami. And so he was kind of dragged in there. And he was in show business. And when he saw Prabhupada was dancing in Arati. And he saw that, that's the most beautiful person, the most charismatic person. And he joined. This was actually Bhavananda Maharaj. He told me that. That's how he came to Krishna consciousness. We can see that Prabhupada was such a wonderful personality. And Prabhupada never made any separate endeavor to become charismatic. It became a natural side effect. Prabhupada, and that proves that verse, Yashasti Bhakti Bhagavata Kinchana Sarvai Gunaistatra Samashate Shula. Prabhupada quotes this verse here. One who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna consistently manifests all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods. When one becomes Krishna conscious, then all the divine qualities become manifest in him. He becomes the most learned, he becomes the most powerful, he becomes the most beautiful. Think of all the good qualities, all the divine qualities, and those qualities will automatically become manifest in him. Sometimes we notice that, especially in our movement, we see the devotees, like apparently devotees do not have that kind of beauty, like the material beauty. In the age of Kali, it has been described that the beauty will be judged by the length of the hair. It has been predicted in the 12th canto. The beauty of a person will be judged by the length of hair, length of his hair. Now, devotees completely got rid of their hair. Probably that's one of the reasons why Vaishnavas shave up in this country. In the other ages, Vaishnavas often did not shave up. Sometimes, but many times when they used to go into the forest, especially. But in the age of Kali, the Vaishnavas, especially Mahaprabhu's followers, and also all the bona fide Vaishnava sampradayas, they shave their heads up. Because they don't allow the Kali influence them through their hair. And also, this so-called material beauty that comes out of eating beef is not there in the devotees, like they're thin, kind of emaciated. But there is a glow in them, and that is the inner, that is the manifestation of their inner joy and inner wisdom. And we can see that the devotees are the most beautiful people. So we can see that apparently it doesn't really matter whether they are beautiful or ugly, but they manifest as a kind of transcendental beauty. So we can see that all the divine qualities are manifest in the devotees. Also, sometimes in India we see some sadhus, those who don't have legs, and they're physically deformed. But you look at their eyes, I mean, if they're bona fide, you look at their eyes and you can see them. They're so beautiful. Their body may not be so beautiful. Their body may be deformed, but the personality is so beautiful. So when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then all the good qualities will become manifest. Now, when we judge a devotee, we must judge him by the degree of his surrender. How much surrendered he is. Often we get carried away by this, by all kinds of material considerations. Like often we judge a devotee by the number of disciples he has, by the amount of money he has stored in the bank, and so on and so forth. But fortunately those days are over now. Like now, just the other day, yesterday I received a letter from Nishinandana Prabhu. He is making an appeal to the GBC that the sannyasis should give their accounts. Like how much they have spent, how much they have collected, how much they have spent. And it's good. Like let everybody be accountable. Especially the sannyasis. Like they should be renounced. And let them display their renounce. Unfortunately, in the age of Kali, sannyasis become the first victim of Maya. Because Kali actually offers the successful sannyasis everything. Dhanam, Janam, and Sundarim. But one has to be very, very careful. And especially Dhanam, the way one spends money, usually we think, oh, I'm spending it for Krishna. That is our general answer. We try to justify everything by the quoting of Krishna consciousness. We are doing it for Krishna. Now, I want to become famous, not for myself. I want to become famous for the sake of Krishna. So you are glorifying me. That mood is very, very detrimental. People are forced to glorify individuals so that they could become famous for Krishna. But unfortunately, the more famous they became, the more inflated their false ego became, and then they became a very big target for Maya. So we have to be very, very careful. And at the same time, devotees, no matter how senior he is, should be open to criticism. If somebody comes and tells Maharaj something, I think something is wrong with you. I mean, we should, instead of getting angry, like Prabhupada, we should try to think that, well, maybe Krishna is speaking through him. And let us give him a patient hearing. And if something is wrong, we should be grateful to him instead of getting angry with him. Like, here is a person who is my friend, who is pointing out my defects. Like, my goal is to become purified, and I'm trying to become purified, but there are some lot of dirt that I cannot really detect. So here is a person who is pointing it out to me. So it's wonderful. So we should be grateful to him instead of getting angry with him. And then only we will be safe, and Krishna consciousness will spread. Actually, the advanced devotees, the senior devotees of this movement, have a lot of responsibility. The onus of spreading Krishna consciousness is upon them to a very great extent. And also Jajjal Acharati Srishtha, the way the great people act, the same as the common people follow. So the leaders, especially of this society, which has been designed by Srila Prabhupada to save the world, has a great responsibility to follow to lead the world. Prabhupada is pointing out that one should not follow these rascal politicians and intellectuals. Now what does Prabhupada actually mean? Prabhupada means that everybody should follow the spiritually elevated personalities. And this ISKCON is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, the only hope for spiritual development all over the world. And the leaders of this society has a great responsibility. Not only the leaders, every single member, but the way the leaders act, accordingly the followers will follow. And if the leaders set a bad example, then the followers will follow in the wrong direction. And the whole mission will be lost. So we must realize that we have come here to become Krishna conscious, and Prabhupada has given us a great responsibility. Every member of the society has a great responsibility. And everybody should try to be free from the influence of Maya. Maya comes in the form of Dhanam, Janam and Sundari. So devotees should be careful to avoid these three things. Unfortunately, in ISKCON, these three things are very much in abundance. There's a lot of opulence, the leaders get a lot of name and fame, glorification, adoration. So we have to be very, very careful. And thus, we can become the real follower of Srila Prabhupada, the pure devotee who graced the world in the recent past, and we all have been linked up with him, either as his sons and daughters, or as his grandchildren. Either as his children or his grandchildren. So we all have a relationship with Prabhupada. And that relationship, if nurtured properly, will take us back to Godhead without any doubt. Sometimes I see some lamentation from the corners of the grandchildren of Prabhupada. But I think they are actually even more fortunate, because the grandfather is more affectionate towards the grandchildren than his own children. The father is not so affectionate to his sons, but he is very affectionate to his grandchildren. So Prabhupada is your grandfather, and he is always there caring for you, And whenever he sees that you are trying to make sincere effort to become advanced in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada will give you all the blessings and Prabhupada will give you all the help. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Maharaj, do you have any comments? Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, yesterday it was stated that getting the dust from the lotus feet of the Vaishnava doesn't actually mean taking the dirt from his feet, but being in that humble mentality. But isn't it also literally part of the process of bhakti yoga?
Taking the dust or being humble. Both are actually part of here. Yes, yes. It's actually an external manifestation of your internal humility or internal submission. Internally you feel submissive, right? And that mood becomes externally manifest in your touching his feet or your offering obeisances. But it should be the other way around. Externally offering obeisances and internally feeling, my God, I wish he was not here. Any other?
You were talking about devotees and wealth. Sometimes it's said that the devotees, because they're surrendered to Krishna, then they should have the best of everything.
Yeah.
And also, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was driving in a Rolls Royce car. So how much should we accept for preacher?
Yeah. Devotee himself should not want to use it for himself. He will immediately offer it to Krishna. The expression via medium actually means that, because being a medium, right? Like offering it immediately to Krishna, and as fast we can do it, to that degree we become transparent, right? When you don't hold anything for ourselves and offer everything to Krishna, that way then we become a transparent via medium. Now, for the sake of preaching, let others make arrangements, right? Say for instance, when a sannyasi goes to make a program, he doesn't go and say, well, so I have come here to give a lecture in your house. No, devotees make arrangements. Right? Then those who are locally situated, they make the arrangements for a sannyasi or a senior devotee to come and give a talk and make some program somewhere. Right? So the same way, the local devotees or his followers will make arrangements for preaching. Like sometimes, you know, they may arrange a Rolls Royce, like for Prabhupada they did. And Prabhupada rode on that. And when somebody got envious, Prabhupada said that actually this Rolls Royce, I think it was a Silver Ghost, he had the best on the top of the line. He said that this Rolls Royce actually is not enough. They should have driven me in a golden chariot. But since they couldn't afford it, they just got a Rolls Royce. And Prabhupada said, actually, I am the representative of God. And we can understand that, you see, the ambassador of a country gets so much respect and so much facilities. So, and the devotees are actually the ambassadors of Vaikuntha, right, in this material nature. So, they should actually get all the facilities. But they do, themselves do not demand it, and nor do they become attached. If somebody says, well, give me a Mercedes-Benz or a Jaguar, not even a Rolls Royce, that is mine. And one should not want anything for himself. But for, and if he is offered something, he makes it a point that it is meant for Krishna's service. Like, in one hand we can see Prabhupada riding a Rolls Royce, but on the other hand, we can see when devotees spent a lot of money to take a Mercedes-Benz to India, then Prabhupada said, no, what's the use of Mercedes-Benz? The roads are bad. Why do we spend so much money? Just get an ambassador. A junky little car that's manufactured in India. And Prabhupada was perfectly all right. So according to time places, actually we have to develop the inner mood like that. And another thing that we have to also consider, that for Prabhupada it was alright. Prabhupada was the founder Acharya.
Right? And Prabhupada actually could even ride a golden chariot, right, and still be unaffected. But I think our generation should not imitate Prabhupada in that respect. Right? Because, you see, when Prabhupada was here, the structure was autocratic, transcendentally autocratic structure. But now, because we are many God brothers together, and practically all of us are almost in the same level as far as our elevation is concerned, right? It's more of a transcendental democracy, right? And in a democracy, the more simple you are, more at home you are, you will feel, and more at home the people around you also will feel. Otherwise, if you just start riding a Rolls Royce, then everybody else will think, why is he doing that? Right? When we all don't even have a car, now why is he riding a Rolls Royce? After all, he's not that advanced. Right? So, for the sake of peace, let us take a humble position. And actually we have seen in the recent past, a lot of envy was breeding. Lot of envy was breeding, although people didn't become vocal about it. And that's one of the reasons why so many devotees left. In ISKCON, who were the first ones to leave after Prabhupada left? The big leaders, those who are not appointed, those who are not gurus, they left. Because all of a sudden they realized that although we all were in the same platform, but all of a sudden these few became exceptional, right? And all of a sudden they were elevated to almost the same platform as Prabhupada was, and they couldn't become vocal about it, and the envy started to breed, and then finally they had to leave the movement. But we have to actually embrace everyone. If somebody becomes envious of our opulence, then let's take a humble position. And actually we can never go wrong becoming humble. We can never go wrong becoming humble.
So, to practice Yukta Vairagya in that way, then should one be a little more advanced, like in the beginning of, I think in Bhaktisiddhanta's life, he performed many austerities and and then later years.
Right. The thing is that he accepted it, to challenge the Mayavadis and pseudo Vaishnavas. Those days in India, if you just went as a sadhu, then you are just a face in the crowd. Right? Because there are millions of sadhus all over the country. Right? If you just go wearing a kopin and walking with a lota in his hand and danda in the other hand, no one will care for you. So that's why he, as an acharya, he used some means to create a wave. He did it according to the time, place and circumstances. Right? And actually a personality like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he actually went driving a Jaguar, not a Rolls. A Jaguar, what to talk about a Jaguar? Even a golden chariot, even the chariot from Vaikuntha is not good enough for him. Really, Krishna will be happy to carry him on his shoulder. Krishna does that. He's with his friend. He as an expression of his love for his friend, when he fights with the friends, and Krishna accepts a voluntary defeat. And then the condition is whoever is defeated must carry the other party on his shoulder, right? So that is what kind of personality Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was. So what a Jaguar for him is, right? So a personality like him can do that. But we should not imitate that. And it's happening. A car nowadays is not a big deal, right? Everybody rides. But the thing is that we should not become too outstanding. Right? Then, others will feel uncomfortable. So in order to make others feel comfortable, let us take a humble position. Right? Yeah.
Sorry. this might be a little digression, because it's Ekadashi, I just wondered to know if you could speak a few words about how it all came about and why 11 days after the new moon, full moon. Because in the Ekadashi book it doesn't exactly explain how it came about.
That was the day when Vishnu, Narayan, or Krishna was in the abode of Jamaraja. And he saw the living entities suffering and crying in pain. So he asked Jamaraj, why is that? Why there is such inhuman, unbearable crying? So, cry of agony. So, Jamaraj said, actually these people are the sinful people, they are suffering in hell. And the suffering is so unbearable that they are crying out in pain. So Krishna immediately felt bad. He felt that they are my children and they are suffering, and so I must do something to deliver them. And he immediately created the Ekadasi Tithi. And that was the 11th day of moon when Krishna was there. So that day became the specific day when she appeared. And that's why one is advised to observe Ekadasi on that day. And by doing that, one becomes free. By observing Ekadasi Vrata on that day, one becomes free from all his sinful reactions. Yeah.
Sometimes there's controversy where people are saying that we should observe an Ekadasi on a Dwadasi. So what is that phenomenon called Dwadasi or Ekadasi?
There are 8 different Dwadasis, and there are different considerations. One is one consideration is, you see, Ekadasi means the 11th day, right? And Dwadasi means the 12th day. Now, the Vedic calculation takes place in 2 different ways. One is the lunar calculation and the other is the solar calculation. Right? The general calculation of the day is according to the solar calculation. And according to us, Vaishnavas, that calculation begins, the day begins 1 hour 36 minutes before sunrise, before 2 pakshas. One paksha is 48 minutes. So that 2 pakshas make one muhurta, and that is Brahma muhurta. So our day actually begins from Brahma muhurta, not exactly from sunrise to sunrise, but Brahma muhurta to Brahma muhurta. So that is one calculation. The other calculation is the lunar calculation. Right? Now, according to lunar calculation, the day may begin at any time. They may even sometimes begin at 11 o'clock in the morning, right? According to lunar calculation. Now, when Ekadasi begins after Brahma Muhurta, right? That is, Ekadasi begins 1.5 hours before sunrise, right? Or less than 1.5 hours before sunrise, then it is considered to be Vidha, or you can say penetrated. Penetrated because the Dashami, the 10th day, has entered onto the Ekadasi day according to solar calculation. So because of this contamination that the 10th day entered into Ekadasi, the Vaishnavas do not observe Ekadasi on the Ekadasi day, but they follow the observer of Ekadasi the following day, that is called Mahadwadasi, one Mahadwadasi. The another consideration is when the new moon or full moon is overlapped by the 14th day of the lunar calculation, then it is called Pokshavardhini Mahadwadasi. Then the previous Ekadasi should be observed on Dwadasi day. One should not observe fast on the Ekadasi, but fast on the Dwadasi. Then there is another consideration called Trish Prisha, that is the conjunction of 3 days, right? Is like Dashami enters into Ekadasi and Ekadasi enters into Dwadasi. So that is also another consideration of Ekadasi, being observed on Mahadwadasi.
So these are the three, and then 2 days, four different considerations, and multiplied by two makes it four different types of mandalas. I was telling Ajamil Prabhu that I have the details, and he has his computer astrological department. So we are going to work it out today. And maybe we'll just post it put it in the board. Yes.
Since you're discussing that point, so much confusion internally because we have the Navadvip calendar and the Los Angeles calendar, and now we have
the calendar. Yeah. Not local. Prabhupada wanted us to follow the Navadvip calendar.
The Los Angeles calendar this year doesn't correspond to Navadvip.
The thing is that, you know, it depends who translates. I mean, the many, every year there are many mistakes in Los Angeles. And now there is another calendar, as you said, third try. There's a computer calendar. So actually, Prabhupada wanted us to follow the Navadvip calendar. And if our computer calculations are correct, then I'm sure it will tell.
I wanted to continue the question by asking, Ekadasi itself has an actual physical cycle, effect on the body. So if we follow Ekadasi, on the wrong day, because we follow the wrong calendars.
Yes.
Do we lose the benefit of following
the calendar? Yeah, actually, in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it has been pointed out that if one observes Ekadasi in a wrong way, then what to talk about losing the benefit, one actually incurs sin. Of course, we have to understand it's a smarter calculation. It's a smarter calculation. You see, Hari Bhakti Vilas was just to defeat the Maya, the smartest, the caste Brahmin. So there are many quotes in Hari Bhakti Vilas which is taken from the scripture but does not really apply in this age. Mahaprabhu's most munificent appearance of the Lord, right? So Mahaprabhu is very, very merciful. And if by mistake we do not observe, he will not take us seriously. Yes, you go.
This is a loaded question. Is this a Mahadwadasi time? Brahma's appearance is Ekadasi.
Yeah, no. Tomorrow is Varahadwadasi, and today is Ekadasi. Now, Varahadwadasi always comes like that. The 12th day is Varahadwadasi. Now, on the appearance day of the Lord, one should fast. Right? But when the appearance day of the Lord proceeds, the Ekadasi, right? Then it has been advised that one should fast on Ekadasi for both the days, for both Varahadwadasi as well as Ekadasi. Otherwise, on Dwadasi day, you have to break fast, right? If you want to observe the fast, also for Varahadwadasi, then you have to observe the fast. I mean, you have to break the fast for Ekadasi in the morning. So that is actually, you know, is breaking your fast. So you are not observing the fast for Bharat. You cannot observe the fast for Bharatadvadasi. So that's why it has been advised that fast on Ekadasi, break your fast after worshipping Bharatadev on the following day. But if there is a Mahadvadasi falling on Bharatadvadasi, then the fast will be on Dvadasi. And this actually indicates that fasting in Ekadasi is even more important than fasting on the appearance day of Varahadeva. Otherwise, the instruction would have been the Ekadasi fast should be on the Varahadvadasi. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.